Ready? Go!
Hello and welcome to the podcast that gives you a light look at growing your content. Today, I was feeling lonely, and so I invited a bird to discuss podcasting with me, because that seems like a good idea, right? Matthew, can you get those out of here?
Hey, you left the window open. You do it.
Ugh, fine.
Hi, I'm Matthew Bird, and this is Photosynthesis.
Hello, and welcome to the show. I am Sarah Ittings, and as my friend Matt has declared, he is Matthew Bird.
That is true.
And Matthew is kind of a special person for me to have on this podcast.
Aww.
Because he's, yeah, you are. Matthew is the person who got me kind of inspired to start going in on podcasting and helped me get a little bit of experience by letting me guest star on his show, The Aux Cable, as well as take over an episode. Me and his social media gal, we stole his show one week and had all sorts of fun with it.
And you even edited that, so...
I did. I even learned how to edit. That was the first time I ever edited a podcast. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that piece of experience. I appreciated that. That was fun.
You're welcome. Of course. Thank you for doing my job for one day or one week, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of a win for both of us, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes, it was.
So... yeah, in a way, we have Matthew to thank for this show. So if it's horrible, you can blame Matthew.
Oh, okay. So that's what it is. If it goes well, you get all the praise and money and glory and everything. And then if it goes wrong, then you're just like, well, it's that guy over there. Just talk to him. Is that what you're saying? Yes. Yes.
Maybe?
It sounds like that is what you are saying, Sarah.
I am sorry. I'm such a complete jerk.
You're not a jerk. You're just being, you're just taking advantage of me. That's all.
Wow. Wow. This is what our friendship has come to.
Okay. Well, what are we doing today, Sarah?
What
am I even doing here?
you've come here to be both praised and tormented by me. Anyhow, today we are going to discuss launching a podcast, because who better to discuss launching a podcast with than the guy who helped me launch my podcast, right?
I guess so. Also, you've done it, so it sounds like we have two experts here, you know?
More or less. I don't know if I'd consider myself an expert, but I at least have experience.
There you go.
So,
experience counts
Matthew,
for something, I think. Yes.
It
yes.
does. I thought I would start out by asking, what got you into podcasting? We all know what got me into it now.
Okay, so currently I have a show that is on hiatus, but it is coming back soon. It is called The Aux Cable. Before that, I was involved in a community around Adventures in Odyssey. And through that, I made a friend that had a podcast called The Wits End Podcast. And so I helped out with editing that at first. And I've always been interested in producing stuff and audio, like audio drama and things like that. So it was just a natural progression because it's an outlet for me to be creative. And it's a very fun platform because it takes advantage of the imagination without like spoon feeding everything. Like video is great. Movies are great. TV is great. But when you're able to fire the imagination a little bit more and people have to sort of use their imagination to draw and fill in what's going on based upon the audio landscape, it's a very fascinating thing to me. And I love being in that world. So that is how I got into podcasting. Plus, I'm a fan of podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts and I always have. So that's just, yeah, it's a natural extension of everything.
They have all influenced you and it has come together. And you're like, I have to make one of these now.
Exactly. And I've actually
sucked into the world.
Yeah, I've helped out with several other podcasts, getting them off the ground or just giving advice and stuff. And there was another podcast that I helped to create, but that is also on hiatus. So I won't even mention it.
As far as getting them off the ground, like what he was saying, Matthew helped me get mine off the ground quite a bit. I had a lot of technical questions I asked him with things, and I know any of you who are going to be launching a podcast are probably going to have very similar questions.
Indeed.
So we're going to try to tackle some of those today for you.
Yes.
So I'm going to start off with picking a hosting service, because I don't know about you, Matt, but as soon as I started looking at launching a podcast, I was really overwhelmed with all of the options. And when I first started, I'm just going, wait, so I can't just like upload this to iTunes?
No,
that would be nice.
See, the thing about podcasts is that it's a decentralized system. There's no gatekeeper. And that's part of just like, that's how the internet works. Or ideally, there's no gatekeepers or anything. So there's a lot of technical knowledge that is required to getting it up off the ground, of course. Like you said, you have to choose a hosting service. And iTunes is a great, directory for discovering and sharing podcasts. And it is certainly one of the most famous and the most used platforms.
Yeah. I mean, besides Google Play, a lot of people use that.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, that's becoming more and more a thing because Android, of course, right? Which has a larger part of the market share currently. Yeah. So with picking a hosting service, do you mind if I quickly give an overview of how a podcast works technically from behind and everything?
Oh, yeah, totally. You're way more the tech guy than I am. So take the stage, please.
Okay. So podcasts. With websites, you have the place where the website's stored, so like the server. And then you have the address and everything pointing to the resource on the server. So for a podcast, you have to put the sound files somewhere. And so that goes onto a server somewhere. You can either do it yourself, which is a lot more difficult, or you can pay to have it done for you. And there's a lot of services out there that are tailored specifically to podcasting. There's a few that Sarah has listed here as great options, and they're sort of the market leaders and what I would recommend myself. There's one called Libsyn, one called Blueberry. And then there are other ways to do it as well. If you wanted to get creative, there are other ways to get your content out there. But once you have the files up, you have to have a feed that collects all the files and puts them into a feed reader like iTunes or Google Play Music Podcasts, which is a really long name, Google Play Music Podcasts. It's weird.
I didn't realize that was the entire name of it.
That's the official name. That's the official name. You can just call it Google Podcasts and it's totally okay.
Wow.
But
that is huge. I had no idea.
Yeah, because they just sort of put it into the Google Play Music service in order to do that. So once you get the feed, like these services like Libsyn and Blueberry, they actually generate a feed for you. But if you're doing it yourself, you have to generate your own feed, which basically means you're hard coding it by hand and you need to know what you're doing. So technically you can do podcasting for very, very, very little money, but you do have to put in a little bit if you're wanting to make it easier. And then once you got the feed, you just submit it to directories and that's how you get discovered. But with...
And you're talking... Oh,
no, go ahead. You go ahead.
I was just going to say, you mentioned that you may need to put in a little bit of money for starting your podcast.
Yes.
So what have you done as far as your podcasts go? Have you had to put very much money into starting your podcast? What kind of expenses are there?
Back when I first started podcasting, I did everything manually, but you still needed a server. So I was paying for a server and a website address. And other than that, everything else was just manual. I have the skills to do that because I am a web developer and I am very, very confident in doing all that work. But so what I ended up doing eventually with the Aux Cable podcast is I wanted to still do it self-hosted so I have control over it. So what I ended up doing is I signed up for the free service with Blueberry. And with that, they actually have a WordPress plugin. So we have a website powered by WordPress. And so when we post a website post, we can choose it the mode to be like a podcast episode. And so when you post that, it automatically shows up in the podcast feed. It'll attach the audio file and the description will automatically be populated with the post content and stuff like that. So that was sort of my solution, was to have a semi-custom solution, a semi-self-hosted setup, but it's still powered by Blueberry for things like statistics.
So, like, as far as your show goes, you mostly just pay for your hosting because you're techie enough to do everything, basically, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Ryan and I want a little bit more a detailed statistics, so we're actually going to probably be spending, now that we've got, like, more momentum behind the show, and it's been around for over a year now, we're actually going to be spending a little bit of money on a service for more complete stats collection and stuff like that, because stats are so hard to collect with podcasts.
Now, for those of you who are not as techie as my friend Matthew here, I looked up the plans and pricing for both Libsyn and Blueberry. And what I've got here, they have on Libsyn, they have two basic podcasting packages that people can sign up for. The first is called Classic 50, and it says, this is the original $5 getting started package. It's a good introductory plan, which provides the base features of Libsyn and enough space to start podcasting. Basic statistics can be added to this plan for an additional $2 per month. So yeah. That is like the super basic plan, $5 a month. And then they have another one that's like a step up. That's like $15 a month.
Uh-huh.
And it says, this is called the Classic 250. And it says, this package is our most popular option for podcasters who are starting to be a little more serious about production of their show. Basic statistics are included, along with enough storage to release regular audio and video episodes. So they're not super duper upfront about like what kind of space that is. And if you read more into their website, I'm sure they show it.
So for Libsyn, but they'll give you a web page that'll host. It's not the most beautiful web page, but you're more signing up to Libsyn for the feed management and the audio management. So when you register, depending on your plan, like Sarah said, they'll give you a different amount of storage. And it's usually per month, I think, with Libsyn. So you'll get like with the basic one, you'll get like, I think, like 50 megabytes, not megabytes. I can't remember. It's quite limited for the first one. And that's like you said, for just getting started. But then you get up to the other one and then it becomes a little bit more manageable and stuff. So when you're encoding your audio file, you have to make sure that it's small enough that it'll fit within your limits for Libsyn. And there's actually tiers above that as well with Libsyn. It's just the you have to dig around for those as well.
Actually, I just saw the plan comparison page here.
Yeah.
Libsyn says that they will give you 50 megabytes a month for $5 a month and 250 megabytes a month for $15 a month. And then on the more advanced plans, you can get 400 megabytes for $20 a month, 800 for $40 a month, or 1500 for $75 a month if you are like a crazy powerhouse producer. But
yeah.
I'm sure if you're at that level, you're not even listening to this show now.
No. So yeah, and the other thing with Libsyn is that it grows. So you can start at one of those lower levels and then you can move it up as you go along. So you don't have to shell out the higher amount of money right up front until you're like, okay, yes, I want to do this more seriously kind of thing.
Yeah, and now over on Blueberry, they're hosting packages. Their smallest one is $12 a month and you get 100 megabytes of storage per month.
Mm-hmm.
Then medium is $20 a month for 250 megabytes of storage. $40 will get you 500. $80 will get you 1,000. And all of them come with unlimited bandwidth and statistics. And actually, if you do anything larger than the small plan, so for $20 a month on up, all of those plans, in addition to audio, they will allow you to have video too. So
yeah,
if you wanted to record a video feed of your show, it's an option.
Yes. And there's multiple ways to do video. The big thing right now is audio podcasting, because originally it was audio podcasting. Then there's this big surge of video podcasting, and that sort of fed into the YouTube phenomena at the time.
And what's the difference here between video podcasting and like, say, vlogging or something?
So like if you're vlogging, you can post that anywhere. But the thing is, like, if you're podcasting with a video feed, it's just like an audio feed. So it'll go through the podcast directories and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to, you could even just like upload to YouTube, and there's a way to generate an RSS feed from a playlist on YouTube. So you could totally use YouTube to do a video podcast. There's some trickery and stuff involved for that, but it is technically possible.
Some people have mentioned to me about podcasting through YouTube, and tell me if this is correct or if you even know. But they have told me that you can basically host your podcast for free on YouTube and then just use that RSS feed to feed into iTunes and Google Play and places like that. Is that true?
Yeah, essentially. You'll want to go through a service called FeedBurner. FeedBurner will convert an RSS feed into a podcast feed, and it'll help with things like statistics creation and stuff. So if you're getting very like started and you don't want to spend money on something like Libsyn and Blueberry, you can use FeedBurner to help format your feed properly and make sure it's got all the podcasting tags and stuff that's necessary for iTunes and Google Play Music podcasts. And that's a totally free service for FeedBurner.
That is really useful to know.
Yeah, so that's like a very good, helpful, like getting started thing. You'll eventually want to move off FeedBurner if you're doing much more than that. And if you're going to use Blueberry and Libsyn, they'll be definitely a lot more thorough with the statistics and more targeted towards the podcasting market. So you've got that more tailored thing. So yeah, FeedBurner is good for that. And you just sort of put in the YouTube feed into FeedBurner and it'll reformat it to make sure that it's compatible with iTunes or whatever.
Way cool. Definitely a good beginner option there.
Yeah.
Now, something else that totally messed me up when I was first starting out with podcasting are these things called ID3 tags. And
okay.
When I uploaded my very first episode of this show, the website kept throwing up this little error at me and it says something having to do with ID3 tags. And I'm just like, okay. Great, what even is this? Is my file corrupt?
Yeah, ID3 tags are a little bit weird. How did you overcome the problem?
I actually started chatting with another friend of mine who's more computer techie than I am. And he's just like, oh, well, ID3 tags are this thing. And he went on to explain to me that they are actually the tags that are attached to your podcast or any other audio file for that matter.
Yeah.
Like when you're listening to stuff on iTunes and things, it'll say your artist name. It'll give you your album art. It'll say like what year it's produced, stuff like that. And basically, he instructed me to import my audio files into iTunes prior to uploading them.
Yeah.
And within iTunes, I can go and change these tags and fill in all of the information by just right-clicking and saying get info, and it will bring up a window where I can enter all of the information for these ID3 tags. And after that, it seemed like it made my feed really happy and
Yes. Everything
uploaded. So I'm glad.
Yes. So like you said, it's great. So for podcasting, the best format for audio podcasts, at least, is MP3 because it's a highly compressed audio file. So you can get down for like the aux cable. We average about an hour per episode, and that'll result in about a 40 megabyte file every time. Depending on the content, it can vary, but that's about a 40 megabyte file every time. And MP3, if you got to look into the details a little bit more about how to format the file, because you want it to be mono, you don't want stereo, unless you're doing like an audio drama type podcast, in which case, yeah, you might want stereo, but you want to make sure it's compressed so that it's not wasting people's downloads and stuff.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that. My very first episode that I uploaded was freaking huge because I did it in stereo, and then a couple days later a friend was like, yeah, you want to do those in mono, and I'm going,
yeah.
Oh,
or you can do cool. Joint stereo, which is a little bit more compressed than just flat out stereo, but when you do that, just make sure that you like Sarah said, you want to have the ID3 tags. So you can, some programs, when you're editing the file, you can actually export the file with the MP3 tags, the ID3 tags in the MP3 file. But usually it's best to add them in afterwards, including the artwork and stuff like that. And like Sarah said, most people actually do use iTunes. Like there are some of the larger podcast networks that will actually use iTunes for that, which is not a hugely widely known fact. But
it's so simple, though. I love doing it through iTunes.
Yeah. iTunes is a little bit sluggish these days for me, so I'm not happy whenever I have to open iTunes. I'm just like, ugh. But you have to do it so that you can export the podcast properly and get all the details into the file. Another way to do it, though, is there's an app called MP3 Tag, and it is a free program that you can download. Of course, be careful about programs that you download, but I've been using MP3 Tag on Windows, and it's been fine. And they will actually allow you to edit the tags as well without having to open iTunes. If you don't want to have to deal with iTunes, this is a great way to do it. And you can batch edit files as well. So you don't have to worry about, like, iTunes is a little clumsy sometimes when you're going through a huge list of things, but MP3 tag helps speed up the process a little bit.
Way cool. I did not know about that. So I'm going to have to look that up, and I will link that in the show notes for everybody.
Yay, show notes. They're important.
Yes. Yay. Yes. Show notes are super important. Actually, that is one thing, ironically, that I did not put into the notes for this episode is show notes. At least I don't think I did. Unless it's like way far down here.
Well, there's a question here that actually can lead into that. So I will bring it up later.
Okay, cool. All right. So another question that some people ask, I actually didn't ask this myself because I already had a website and I just decided to make a branch page for my podcast. But some people wonder, should my podcast have a website? Is it worth it? What do you think?
Yes and no. Is it worth it? Yes and no. You don't have to have a podcast website, but you can just have a feed somewhere somewhere. And that's enough for some people. But I think if you're going to be doing a podcast and you want to be discoverable, it's important to have a podcast website for sure. Especially if you're going to be giving details about something, then you want people to be able to look up those details later. Because a lot of people listen to podcasts on transit or while they're driving or while they're doing dishes or housework or whatever. They're doing something while they're listening to podcasts. So you want to give them a link so that they can get the things that you talked about in the episode very easily, like in show notes and stuff. And this is where I was actually saying that show notes sort of fits into the website aspect. So yes, if you're going to have show notes, a website isn't necessary, but it is very helpful to have, especially if you're going to be being a resource for people.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think it could be helpful to have a website because then if people are Googling the topic that you discuss in your show,
yes,
then your website might turn up in the search results and they'll be turned on to it, whereas they otherwise might not be. And exactly. It also is nice to have a legit looking website to link on your social media profiles.
Mm-hmm.
If you have socials for your program, which I think is a really good idea. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those are all great places to be able to get your show out there and noticed and produce some really fun behind the scenes content along the way.
Especially if you want to nurture a community around your show and you want to be able to interact with your listeners, you want to have a social media presence, and a web presence is a big part of that oftentimes because it helps to introduce the show and be the face of the show. Because in podcast directories, you're just sort of like, oh, here's the show. They're on episode 53. Where do I start? It's like, how do I know what this show is about and stuff? So having a website is a sort of a good like door into your podcast. So you can give people you're new around here. So you can have an intro page and be like, here's basically what we are. You can have a trailer episode sort of saying, hey, this is a small example of what we do, and you can introduce yourself and your topics and what your show is all about and that sort of thing. So having a website, I think, is very important, and having an intro page with a trailer and stuff is important. Having a subscription page with information about where to listen to the podcast is important. You can have the episodes listed on your website as well. That way people don't have to go to a podcast app or directory or anything to listen to it. They can just go to your website. That's a very good way, especially if you're a resource type podcast, which I think this one is for you, Sarah, right?
Yeah.
And having a website is great for that, especially.
Yeah, definitely.
So consider the format of your podcast. That will inform your decision about a website and what you do with that website.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of along the lines of websites, something else that will give a good face and a visual to your podcast is your album art. And
oh, yeah.
In fact, I think iTunes and Google Play, don't they actually require you to have album art?
Yes. Yeah, you can't submit to them without album artwork, and it has to be a specific size.
Yeah. Do you know what that size is? Because honestly, I forgot to check.
It's going up and up and up. Like, I think Google Play is now at 3,000 pixels by 3,000 pixels. That's not the minimum size.
Dang.
But that's like the recommended size.
Oh my word. Wow. That's actually a lot bigger than I thought it would be.
Yeah. I believe the minimum is 800 by 800. Usually you can get away with smaller even. When you are talking about making cover art, you want it to scale well on different screen sizes. Like now on your phone, you've got the same number of pixels or even more pixels than your television on the size of your screen. So you want to have a highly detailed images for those and stuff. But then some people will even play podcasts on their TV through like Apple TV or Google Chromecast, right?
So true. I kind of forgot people bring up podcasts on so many other mediums than just their phones or whatever.
Yeah. And this is where statistics help you, because you can be like, what are people using to listen to my podcast and stuff? And it's also where statistics will fail you. So you'll have to do some like research and do questions. A lot of podcasts have Q&A, like they surveys. That's what it's called. Surveys, where they ask their listeners, hey, go to this website. Again, another use for your website. You can have surveys on it, and you ask your audience to answer questions about where they listen, how they listen. And you usually provide incentive with like some sort of contest and say, hey, if you fill out the survey, you could win this thing or that thing. So when you're making album artwork, you want to look at the main podcast directories where you want to be listed and see what their requirements are. Then you can totally get away with that.
Thinking back, I think I actually did end up creating a 3,000 3,000 by 3,000 pixel cover art for this podcast.
Okay.
I was just thinking about the files that I had created. Something else that's important too, in addition to just making a file that's the correct size, you want to have something that's visually appealing and something that will like stick in people's minds so that when they yeah. think of your show, they'll kind of remember your logo. Or if they see your logo, they'll be like, oh, it goes with that show.
It's an iconic piece where it's like when you look at the golden arches of McDonald's, you think, oh, McDonald's kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like for this podcast, I have my little plant that's growing up in the middle of this sunburst podcast icon logo yeah. thing. So I tried to keep it pretty simple. I tried to not use more than like 5 colors in my palette for yeah. doing the album art, which I have been told by designers is a good thing to strive for when you're creating a logo. Not to go too overboard on yes. colors and shades and stuff, to keep yes. things just clean and simple as possible.
Yeah.
Do you have any other tips? I know you're also into a bit of graphic design.
Yeah. So when you're designing a cover for your podcast, you want it to be very simple. You want it to have focus. You don't want it to be all over the place. Generally speaking, a photograph is not a great cover for podcasts unless you treat it correctly afterwards, right? So you want to make sure that the colors and everything, like Sarah said, are very simple. There's this one podcast that it's a picture of the host, but it's from this really creative angle. And then the focus, other than the photo, is just the text, like the title of the podcast. So it is ideal to have the name of the podcast in the cover art, especially today on phones, because they'll usually just show the cover art and that's all you get.
Yeah, one of these days I may end up redesigning mine for that reason.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have text accompanied with the cover in all contexts. I would say if you're going to make a cover, to try to put your actual name in there somewhere. You can put your tagline in there, but don't make it a huge focus. And keep in mind that these covers have to scale down from really tiny to really big. So in a big list of podcasts, you want your cover to be recognizable still, but the size might be itty bitty or it might be huge. You don't know. So when you're designing it, make sure that you view it in different sizes and you're sort of like, is this still recognizable? Is it still unique? Do the colors speak to the brand that I am trying to portray and whatever else? And also beware that some podcast directories have a limit on file size as well as pixel size. So just again, like just check because those standards are sometimes changing, but 1,000 pixels, try to do a PNG image, especially if it's a graphic. If it's a photo, you can do JPEG, but I would still recommend PNG as the format.
So we've been covering a lot of stuff to think about as far as the technical aspects and the artistic aspects of launching a podcast. We went through a lot of back-end stuff,
yes.
but we need to transition a little bit into actually getting that first episode out there. That's what everybody's excited to do. That's why we're podcasting. And yeah. along with getting that first episode published, there is a lot of planning that goes into making each episode of your show.
Yeah.
So like with my show, before I even hit record on my first episode, I started out by printing off a project planner sheet from scatteredsquirrel.com to kind of help give me an outline of just something to look at to get my brain going to think about like, okay, how should I structure things? And the page had a list of bullet points and it had like an idea cloud up at the top and then a note section at the bottom. And so I started out by filling in that bullet point list and I wrote down 34 ideas for episode topics just to make sure that I have enough ideas to try to keep this show going.
Yeah. Because
you don't want to start a show and then be like 10 episodes in and go like, great, I don't know what the heck I'm going to talk about for the rest of this season.
It's very important to have a good idea as the base. It is good to like just do podcasts for the fun of podcasting, but I think that if you're going to do it for any amount of time, it's good to have a great idea that you can really rally behind, like you said.
Yeah, totally. So I went ahead and I wrote down like any ideas I had on that page as far as episodes. I wrote down stuff about like show structure, the theme of the program, maybe people who I would want to interview.
Yeah.
Then along the way, I talked to a bunch of people about my idea and about launching my show. And so everybody comes with their own pieces of advice and tips. And so I wrote those things down. And then I wrote down like every single idea I had for titling the show, because it's going to take you a little while to come up with just the right title for your
show. Oh my goodness.
You don't want to settle on like the first thing that comes to mind, or else this show would have been called Marketing Seeds, which seemed weird.
And there's some other things about titling that you have to keep in mind for podcasts. It's a little bit weird because it's a hard thing to do sometimes with titles, but you want to try and avoid putting the word "the" at the beginning of your podcast. It's very hard sometimes. It's very tempting to be like "the blank" and then "podcast" at the end. So you want to try and have something a little bit different. Like yours is just photosynthesis. And then you have a tagline that explains what it is.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing to have podcast in the title, but you want to try and avoid it. In my opinion, I think you should try and avoid it. With my show though, it's like, okay, it's called The Aux Cable. Yes, I know. I'm a little bit hypocritical.
As you were saying that, I was thinking it was kind of ironic that you're giving this advice.
Yes. But I mean, in our context, it kind of makes sense because if it's just called Aux Cable, it's not going to
be like, what?
Yeah. So The Aux Cable, and ours isn't called The Aux Cable Podcast, but a lot of people call it The Aux Cable Podcast. And we're fine with that.
To differentiate it from the piece of technology of the aux cable.
Yeah, so it does make sense in this circumstance and stuff. You also want to find a name that you can use in a URL for the name of your website. So for the aux cable, auxcable.com is taken. The aux cable is taken. We didn't want to do the auxcablepodcast.com because that's very long. What we ended up doing is aux cable show. And that also, by putting show in the URL, we're not limiting ourselves just to podcast as a format for expressing our stuff, right? What we're trying to do. Like if we wanted to expand beyond just podcast, and that's also partly why we didn't put podcast at the name of the official name, is we can expand beyond the podcast and we don't have to worry about like, oh, this is all geared towards podcast. Now we can expand to YouTube and whatever, and we're still The Aux Cable. It's not a big deal.
That is so true. I thought about that when I was naming my show as well. I'm just like, photosynthesis. I like the name because it can go everywhere. It's always associated with growth. And I like the fact that I could make plant puns with it.
Yeah. And that's really cool that you were able to do that because it's taking an angle. What you want to do is you want to take an angle on something and commit to it. And you want to try and have it so that people can connect the dots fairly easily. But at the same time, like, you don't want to confuse people with messaging and stuff. But at the same time, it's fun to have that angle into something. So for ours, like the aux cable, it's supposed to be plugging people into the latest and greatest advice on life or something like that. I can't remember what our tagline
plugging
is.
Plugging you into advice on everything.
Yeah, and then everything as an echo. Yes, because that's what happens.
Obviously, I listen to his show more than he does.
Well, I used to listen all the time. I'm actually, okay, so that's important. I will say it's good to be a fan of your own show because you want to know what people are listening to. You don't just put it out there and be like, ugh, whatever. It's good to like be aware of what you're putting out there and stuff. And once you've done it for a while, you can be a little more confident in what you've put out and stuff without having to listen to it over and over again. But yeah, be a fan of your own show so that you know what the fan experience could be like.
Yeah, like before I publish this episode every week, as soon as I'm done editing, I always do a listen through before uploading. Yeah.
And don't obsess over it. It's not going to be perfect. Starting anything, do your best and everything, but just get something up there because you're going to be like obsessing over every little detail and you just have to do it.
Practice is better than perfection.
Yeah, especially with podcasts because you're not going to learn by not doing and just trying to perfect. You're going to only learn by doing and stuff.
Yeah, and so as far as getting ready to launch your show goes, something to keep in mind before hitting record is you're going to want to have an outline of how your show is going to go. You don't want to just turn on your mic and ramble forever because maybe you have that kind of skill. But most people I know, if they do that, it's going to turn into a train wreck.
Yeah.
So think through what each episode is going to be about and do some kind of a base outline before you start recording your program. And I know I have done that with my show for every episode, and I've been on Matthew's show enough to know that him and Ryan do the same with theirs.
Helps a ton. I was just going to say, it's kind of like doing a pilot for a television show or anything. It's like you just sort of give it a test run, and if it's good enough to actually release, then you can release it, or you just hold it to yourself and be like, okay, now I have an idea of what the format and stuff is, like you sort of said, right?
Yeah. So we covered a lot of pre-planning here. Is there anything that you have to add that maybe you and Ryan did with the aux cable?
Yeah. So we talked about the aux cable for a couple of years before, or a full year. I can't remember how long before we actually did it. And when we decided to do it, we couldn't decide on a name quite. We had a huge, oh my goodness, the lists of names that we've gone through. and the variations upon the format and the everything. Plus, the show evolved once we started doing it. Things kind of just changed after doing it every single week. So, yeah, the pre-planning stuff, you want to like have, like Sarah sort of said this already, but you want to have a good seed for an idea. Have fun with it. But be sure, I think it's important to listen to other podcasts, if only to get some inspiration on formats and stuff. Because some people do, all they do is for their podcast, they turn on the microphone and it's just them talking for 20 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever. There's some podcasts I listen to that are really, really good like that. And then some that aren't so great like that. It all depends on the content, because that's the most important thing, I think, is the content and what's actually being put out. You can have the best theme song, you can have the best audio design and production, you can have a full editing suite and everything, but if the content isn't compelling and gripping for the audience, then it's not going to be a great show. And you're not just owed an audience because you put something out there. You have to earn it through actually putting something in. So put a lot of thought into everything. If you want to do it just for fun, then sure, do it just for fun, but don't expect a great humongous thing for that just by doing something fun. It's great for the experience, I will say that, but if you're looking for an audience, you're going to have to put in a lot of work and you may not actually have a great return on that. Sometimes you just, it doesn't click, you know?
And now while Matthew is completely and totally correct about it mattering the most about your content rather than your production quality.
Yes.
I am going to interject here and say that production quality is still important because you don't want to sit down and listen to a show, no matter how great it is, if the audio quality hurts your ears.
Yeah, exactly. There's a kind of a standard. Audio is hugely important. So yeah, when you are doing that, you want to invest in good sound.
Yeah. And the first thing that most people think about for good sound is the microphone, which is important, and we will get back to that.
Yeah.
But I want to emphasize first, over having a good microphone, having a good recording spot, I think, is even more important than having a good mic. Because even if your mic is amazing, if your recording area is full of echo or background noise or fans running or whatever, that is going to just ruin any good quality your microphone can provide for you.
Indeed. Yeah. That was actually the first thing that happened for the Wits End podcast. When I joined in, that was the first thing I said. I was just like, where are you guys recording and stuff? Maybe you can change your environment slightly. So things when you're recording, it's important to look for a quiet space, like Sarah said, away from machines that will cause noise or maybe an open window even, right? They seem like obvious things, like to close the window and stuff like that. But sometimes you just like, oh, listening back to the file and you're like, wait a minute, what's that noise there? And it's just like, oh, okay. So like silence your phone, like have a checklist before you go in to record, like silence your phone, close the windows, ask people that are in your house or wherever, say, hey, I'm recording. Could you please just be mindful of that? So don't turn on the leaf blower outside or something, you know, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And even beyond that, even if you are all alone in your house, everything seems great and you're just recording in your bedroom, even stuff in there can really mess with your audio quality.
Yes.
Like if you have any kind of like an echo that bounces off your walls, you won't notice it just standing in your room talking. But as soon as you play back your recording, you're going, oh, why does this sound weird? And something that is really helpful that I do, if any of you have followed me on Instagram, you've seen it, and it looks really silly, but I build a blanket fort to record in because I'm too poor to have my own recording studio. But the blankets, having the blanket over the top of me and the pillows surrounding me, it helps dampen the sound and keeps echoes from bouncing around and just gives a whole better, clearer sound to the show.
Yes, it's very true. You want to have, if you can, carpeted floors, and you want to have a room that is full of things. And if you don't have things to help deaden sound, then like Sarah said, build a blanket fort is the best thing that you can do. I did a similar thing. I have PVC piping that I've built into sort of a mount for blankets. So I don't have to have blankets on me, but they're near me. They help deaden the sound and stuff. And it's very important that the direction that you're speaking, usually you're speaking towards a wall because your computer's up against a wall or something like that, right? If you can, put some kind of sound reducing material on that wall if you can, because that is where the echo originates. And so it's important to soundproof behind you, but in front of you too. So,
or like even put a pillow behind your computer. That can help.
Yeah. So it's just like if you put something like a pillow, or if you're able to tack up a blanket on the wall, then do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just be creative. Turn it into a redecorating project. Or if you live in a major city, sometimes your library will have studios available for, like, you just book some time and then you can go in there. If you want to do that, that's a free option that is sometimes available depending on where you live, as a fun tip.
That is very true. Matthew is lucky enough to live in Vancouver, BC, yes, where he has a fabulous library with that kind of offering. I unfortunately do not. So I build blanket forts in my bedroom and look super unclassy.
Yeah, but it's more fun.
I get good audio sound out of it.
Exactly. And you get to have a little bit of fun. So it's all good.
It's so true. And now that we have covered what you should do to get the best audio quality, what about microphones? What do you use for a mic?
Okay, so I went a little overboard for my first microphone. Okay, back in the day though, I used when I was a little kid doing like audio dramas, I took books, like I took the 39 Clues book series and I started to write scripts from that for my siblings to perform with me. And it actually turned out really, really good. But we used a combination of a Logitech desk microphone and the microphone that is included with the Wii game. Oh, what is it called? The singing game. GarageBand.
So, that was on the Wii?
Yeah, they had it on the Wii as well. So we had the Wii version.
I didn't know that. That sounds awesome. Like, is it the same GarageBand that iTunes has? I'm not iTunes. Mac?
No. It's GarageBand as in like, or Rock Band, I guess. Maybe it's Rock Band. I said the wrong name.
Rock Band. Yes. Okay. This makes sense now. Yeah. Okay.
Like our family had the Beatles Rock Band. So I just used the microphone from that. And it had a microphone stand and everything. And I was directing my siblings. I was just like, hey, read this. And then I couldn't get a female voice. So I did it myself. And then I pitched it up in post. It actually sounded very creepy. But at the same time, it's not... It's quite enjoyable. It's not annoying. It's actually listenable. It's kind of fun.
Is there any chance I can link to that in the show notes?
I actually have that on my website somewhere, so maybe. We'll see.
I'm really curious to hear this now. This sounds hilarious.
I have a clip that I can give you, yes, for sure.
Awesome.
But that one was done with the microphone for Rock Band. So it has a USB port on it, so I plugged it into my Windows computer, messed around with drivers and stuff in it, and it worked. But now what I have is I have a full audio interface that plugs into my Mac with a USB cable, and that is an M-Box, and that is actually pretty good. But what I would recommend for people getting started is if you have an XLR microphone, to get an Icicle from the, what is it called? Blue. Blue microphones, they make a little thing called the Blue Icicle, and that will change your microphone signal from an analog one to a digital one that you can plug into your computer. And then my microphone itself is called the Studio Project C1. It's a kind of a fancy mic. It was recommended to me by a couple people who are sort of in the audio drama and podcasting arena. Some actors with home studios, they actually, this is a very go-to microphone for that. So I got it off of eBay for not that much. Like, it's about a $200 microphone, I believe. I got it for like $150, I think. And the M-Box, same story. It's like a $300 device for more like $200 because I was looking around and I took time to get it. So yeah, that is what I have.
And as far as my recording setup goes, like you said, Blue is a good brand to go with. I have something a little higher than the Icicle. I've got the Blue Yeti, which is a USB plug-and-play mic, and it has three different settings on it. There's one that's specifically tailored to podcasters, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah.
There's one that is more tailored towards recording music, and then there's just your regular unfiltered, you can do what you want with this raw audio setting.
Yeah. Because Blue, they've got like some pre-processing that happens in the device itself. Like you said, the Nessie, it actually helps to make the audio sound better, but it messes with the audio. So yeah, Blue Company, I would say if you're looking to get into podcasting and you're somewhat serious, I would go with a Yeti or a Nessie or a Snowball. One of those ones.
I feel like the Nessie is, out of the ones that I've used, the best because it has a higher audio quality than the Snowball does.
Yeah. I agree.
But it's a lot less complicated to use than the Yeti. I had borrowed a Yeti from a friend for a while, and it was good, but I actually have better audio quality with my Nessie because I am so much better at using the Nessie. It's very, very beginner-friendly, which I love.
So yeah, the thing with, like you said, there's sort of like the Snowball is sort of the least expensive option out of those three, but it's, you know, very, very basic. And then you move up to the Nessie and it's a little bit more expensive, yes, but a lot of it is automatic, so you don't have to worry about that so much. And then you get up to the Yeti and you get a little bit more fine-tuned control. And there's the Yeti Pro, which has the analog output as well as the USB output. But all the three microphones that Sarah just mentioned plug in with USB, which is really helpful instead of having to use an interface like the M-Box or the Icicle, because that just adds another step to the process and you have to pay more and stuff. So, but that is more professional sound and stuff with the M-Box and stuff. So it's all where you want to take it, where what you're doing with it and everything, and it's all like up to you. But at the very least, you can get a decent USB microphone. There is one from, I can't remember the name of the company, but there's one from a pretty mainstream microphone company, but it's very inexpensive. It's like $60 or something like that in the States. And that's what a lot of people will use as their first microphone. I can't remember the name of it for the life of me.
I wish I could think of it, because what you're saying sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah.
And it's not coming to me either.
Josh Taylor mentioned it one time, and I couldn't remember what it was before we started tonight. So
if you think of it later, message me and I will add it to the show notes.
Yes, it will be in the show notes for sure. I will be able to find it somehow.
So if nothing else, you now have to go to my website and read the show notes so that you can find out what this mysterious other $60 microphone is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things. It's a hook to get people going to where you want them to go.
Exactly. That is sarahittings.com/photosynthesis.
sarahittings.com with two D's. Right. Yep.
sarahittings.com/photosynthesis.
Yes. There you go.
Oh my word. Siri just turned on and I don't know why, but all of a sudden Siri turned on my phone and now she's bringing up my website.
Well, that's handy. Thank her for me. Thanks, Siri.
Thank you, Siri. What even? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, I feel like we have covered an intro to podcasting really, really well. What do you think?
We've talked about a lot of stuff and there's definitely more that you can get into, but this is a very good basic intro, I believe. So yes.
Cool. Do you have anything to add?
Don't stress too much about everything. Just jump in, have fun with it. Especially if this is your first go about it, you know, as far as software, for editing and stuff, if you've got a Mac, just use GarageBand. It's fine.
Oh, my word. You're right. We totally didn't cover software. I will just toss in here that I use Audacity for recording and editing, which is by no means an industry standard.
No.
Some podcasters really talk down about it.
Yeah.
I feel like it suits my needs fine. It's a good free option. And if you're a beginner and you don't want to shell out a bunch of money for an editor, it's a decent enough route to go.
Yeah, so that's a good base one. If you are willing to spend a little bit of money, I would recommend that you go with...
That's a big engine.
Yeah.
Airplane?
No, we're on a hill and there's a truck trying to get up the hill. Okay.
Oh.
If you are willing to spend a little bit of money on an editing program, then I would recommend that you go with Adobe Audition. It's a monthly subscription, yes, but it's sort of more standard if you're going to be going into audio and stuff. And you can get a single app subscription for, I think it's $48 or something like that, US. I don't know what it is because, like, I'm in Canada, so the pricing is different than what it's advertised as and stuff. And if you don't have that, then there's another editing software that they have a free preview. I think it's something like I can't remember. Again, I will give you the name later because I can't think of it off the top of my head right now. But it's another one that it sort of has a free preview. So you can like play with it a little bit. And I think it's a single license. So you buy it once. You don't have to worry about a subscription for that one. If I remember correctly, I might be remembering incorrectly because these things change all the time. There's a lot happening in podcasts right now. So there's a lot of competition and a lot of new things coming out. There's some automatic editing, like some editing tools that are powered by AI. So it'll try to like learn how to edit the podcast for you and stuff. And then that stuff's like very new and very experimental. But, and I would I would not start with that stuff at all, because if you're starting, it's better to have the hands-on experience so that you know how everything works and you can put everything together. But other than that, like, yeah, we did cover pretty much everything that you need to get started. But yeah, just jump in, make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. So just be fearless and have some fun.
Exactly what he said. And if you have any other questions, tweet them to PhotoSynthShow or post them on the Photosynthesis Podcast Facebook page, and I will research your questions, and if I get enough of them, I will go ahead and make a second show with all of the answers to your other podcasting questions.
A follow-up, if you will, right?
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, I will say this. Until next time, keep growing, my friend.
Oh, come on. Like I need to grow. I'm over a head taller than you are.
Fine, whatever. I'll just sit here and be short, and I will grow myself, and you don't have to do a thing. Anyway, everybody, it has been a great show, and thank you again to Matthew Bird for being on the podcast, and you should definitely go check out his show, The Aux Cable, on iTunes and Google Play, and I will link to it in the show notes. It is currently on hiatus, as he said, but it is fabulous. You should definitely give it a listen.
We're coming back very soon. We've both had a very busy summer and fall, but now we're coming back. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Sarah. It's been lovely chatting with you again, so...
Awesome. Thank you. And I will see you all next time. If you want sparks of photosynthesis delivered to your social media feed, go follow PhotoSynth Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's Photo, S-Y-N-T-H, Show. And our music is provided by Vexunto.
Cool.